I hope you saw the full moon this past week. It's called the Hunter Moon. The Hunter Moon has a powerful mystique. It rises shortly after sunset and appears very close to the horizon. It often appears bigger, brighter, and more orange than normal. Native Americans called it the Hunter Moon because they hunted deer by moonlight, in October. The deer got fattened up over the summer, and then the Native Americans killed them, stockpiled the meat for the winter. So it's called the Hunter Moon. I wrote about the Hunter Moon last year when I wrote the book on Jim Smith and the prison ministry. 40 years ago this week, we had a staff overnight in Keuka Lake. Jim Smith was there, Julie Augsbury was there, she was the director of the child care, and it was 4 years before they got married. Well, that night, there was the full moon, the Hunter Moon, the October moon. Jim saw the moon, motioned to Julie, and said to the staff, "We're going out for a little canoe ride." So we all smiled. Well, when they got out in the middle of Keuka Lake, a huge wind came and capsized their canoe, and they couldn't right side it. Jim is an athletic guy, but he couldn't get it up straight. So they were in the frigid October waters for 2 hours, drifting down the middle of the lake. They straddled the overturned canoe, and they held hands, and desperately they called out over and over again in unison, "Help! Help! Help!" But nobody heard them, because it was October, and all the cottagers have gone. Jim looked up at the full moon, and he felt God's presence. But then a big cloud covered the moon. He realized that time was running out. The line between life and death was pretty thin. Things looked pretty bleak. And yet he said he felt a sense of peace. He thought, if I die, it's okay. I belong to God. Midway down the lake, there was a restaurant, and it was 10 o'clock, and a dishwasher was emptying the garbage out back, and he heard the sounds coming from the lake. So he went and got in his boat to look, but he couldn't find anybody. He was just ready to give up, and then the full moon came out from the clouds. The moonlight glittered on the bottom of the boat. And so he came over there. When the boat arrived, Julie's head fell backwards. She was unconscious with hypothermia, and she was dead weight as the man lifted her into the boat. It was a scary night for all of us. The Hunter Moon, it helped Native Americans find deer. It helped a dishwasher find Jim and Julie. In the gospel today, we hear the story of Bartimaeus, the blind beggar. As Jesus passes through Jericho, he's sitting by the side of the road, and like Jim and Julie, Bartimaeus yells out, "Son of David, have pity on me." He yells it over and over again, "Have pity on me, have pity on me," but Jesus doesn't hear him. Why? Because the people rebuked him and told him to be quiet. Now, it's hard enough for Bartimaeus to have a disability. He's blind. So why would you rebuke a person with a disability? Because people with disabilities sometimes make it inconvenient for other people, and it still happens today. People in wheelchairs, for example, want to enter certain buildings, but not all buildings are handicap accessible because people don't want to spend the money on it. It's too inconvenient. People who are deaf want to attend certain meetings, but not all meetings are signed. Thank God we have Susan here. And this happens all the time. Agencies want to build a group home in a certain neighborhood, and the neighbors say, "Not in my backyard." When we started Isaiah House, our house for the dying, the neighbors said, "We don't want you in our neighborhood. We don't want sirens and ambulances arriving in the middle of the night and waking us up." When we started Dimitri House, our house for the homeless, the neighbors said, "We don't want you in our neighborhood. We don't want the homeless guys urinating on our bushes." So Bartimaeus was causing an inconvenience. He was yelling out, and they tried to silence him. But here's a great line in the scripture. They rebuked him and told him to be quiet, but he called out even louder. Oppression is like a nail. The harder you hit the nail, the deeper the nail goes into the wood. The harder you oppress people, the deeper their resolve to fight it. You can only keep people in the back of the bus for so long. Malala, the 17-year-old Pakistani girl, was shot in the head by the Taliban. They shot her because she stood up for the woman's right to education. She received the Nobel Peace Prize, and now she's the poster girl for female education. Malala gives a lot of hope to the women in Afghanistan because they're suffering now under the Taliban. Think of all the voices that the church tried to silence over the years. Galileo, Martin Luther, Teresa of Avila, Teilhard de Chardin, Hans Kung, Joan Chittister, Roy Bourgeois, Mary Rammerman. But they called out even louder. St. Catherine of Siena said, cry out as though you had a million voices. It is silence that kills the world. Dr. King said, our lives begin to end when we are silent about things that matter. They rebuked Bartimaeus and told him to be quiet, but he called out even louder. Now, Jesus appreciated this about Bartimaeus, how he stood up for himself. Jesus was very impressed with that. Although he had a disability, Bartimaeus had the ability to advocate for himself. Some of you know Damaris Rivera, a talented young singer in our church. Her birthday was this week. She just turned 33. But when she was 6 years old, she heard the gospel choir at church, and she asked her parents if she could join the choir. And her parents said, honey, you're 6 years old. You can't be part of the choir. You're too young. And then she disappeared, and they're talking to other people. Out of the corner of their eye, they see Damaris, the six-year-old, coming down the steps from the sanctuary. And she announces very proudly, Mr. Banks says I have to show up at 7 o'clock on Tuesday for rehearsal. She advocated for herself. Same thing for Simone Biles, that world-famous gymnast. In Tokyo Olympics last summer, she opted out of some of the competitions, and people were shocked and disappointed. But she felt disoriented and thought that performing could have led to serious injury, so she didn't do it. Resisting pressure, she put her mental health first and her physical health. And now she's the role model for young people. Now when kids ask themselves, under pressure from their coaches, do I have to be what somebody else wants me to be? The answer is now, no. Workers today are advocating for themselves. The pandemic has brought about a resurgence of labor unions. Because of the shortage of workers, workers now have the upper hand. 10,000 United Auto Workers who build John Deere tractors went on strike in Illinois, Kansas, and Iowa. During the pandemic, they were forced to work 10, 12-hour days. And during the first three quarters of this year, John Deere made $4.7 billion, more than they had in years. So these workers are demanding to cut into John Deere's corporate greed. They want a bigger share of the wealth that they created with their labor. And the low-wage workers are saying, we are worth more than this. We will not return to starvation wages while the company makes billions. They are advocating for themselves. When Bartimaeus advocates for himself, Jesus pays him the biggest compliment. Two words say it all. Jesus stopped. What's it mean when you stop? You count. You matter. You're important. You're not just a face in the crowd. Love is giving attention, focusing on a person, putting everything else on hold. Here's an interesting thing. If it weren't for Bartimaeus' disability, he never would have met Jesus. Same thing for sin. We often meet God through our mistakes. Think of the woman caught in adultery. She never would have met Jesus if it weren't for her mistake. We come to God not by getting it right, but by getting it wrong. We often meet God not when everything is smooth, but when everything is falling apart. Jesus calls him over. He calls him. So now this is not just the story of healing, it's a story of discipleship. Jesus calls him the way he called the fisherman, the way he called Matthew from his tax collecting booth. Now he wants this blind beggar to be part of his inner circle. How does Bartimaeus respond to the call of Jesus? He throws away his cloak, he springs up, and he comes to Jesus. The cloak was everything that he had. Even the coins were put in his cloak that people gave him. So when he tossed off his cloak, all the coins went spilling. He didn't care because he wanted to be with Jesus. Such a different reaction from the rich young man that we heard a couple weeks ago. When Jesus called him, he went away sad because he didn't want to part with his money and his property. But for Bartimaeus, nothing else mattered. He springs into action. Jesus asked him, "What do you want me to do for you? What do you want me to do for you?" Now, Jesus asks a lot of questions in the New Testament, but that question is the one that's asked the most frequently. What do you want me to do for you? And it's also the most beautiful question. It shows the humility of Jesus. He doesn't presume anything. Last week when Jesus asked James and John the same question, "What do you want me to do for you?" They said, "We want to sit one at your right and one at your left when you come into the kingdom." Jesus did not grant that arrogant request. But this week, when Jesus asked Bartimaeus the same question, "What do you want me to do for you?" Bartimaeus says, "I want to see," and Jesus granted his request. So we learn that Jesus will not grant privilege, but he will grant vision. He won't grant privilege, whether it's white privilege, male privilege, wealth privilege, but he will grant vision. He will grant sight. I want to see. In the Bible, seeing is not just about physical sight. It's about belief. Seeing is classical language for experiencing God, for trusting God. Our choir sings, "Open the eyes of my heart, Lord. I want to see you." Some of you know Benny Thompson. She told us one time, "My life was going great until I got cancer. Because of cancer, I lost one of my eyes. The whole ordeal was life-changing. My faith was deepened, and now I see with one eye much better than I did before with both." Seeing means experiencing God. Richard Rohr said recently, "In Israel, Jesus and the early church offered people an experience. Then Christianity moved to Greece, and it became a philosophy. When it moved to Rome, it became organized religion. When it spread to Europe, it became a culture. Finally, it moved to North America, and it became a business." How's that for a summary of 2,000 years? Let me read that again. Where is it? In Israel, Jesus and the early church offered people an experience. Christianity moved to Greece, and it became a philosophy. When it moved to Rome, it became an organized religion. And then it spread to Europe and became a culture. It moved to North America and became a business. So the original need or desire of a Jesus experience was lost. Today, we pretend that Jesus is Lord, but we really look to politicians and presidents and emperors for our authority. We pretend to obey Jesus' words, but what we really follow is worldly wisdom. But Jesus offers Bartimaeus an experience to be with him. The last line says he received his sight and walked with him up the road. He followed him. He didn't follow politicians or presidents. He became part of Jesus' circle, part of Jesus' way of thinking, part of his energy, part of his living, of being countercultural, of marching to a different drum, of creating an alternative universe, the kingdom of God, God's dream for the world, of being nonviolent, non-judgmental, generous, compassionate, forgiving, challenging the powerful, uplifting the lowly, the experience of walking with Jesus. Mark's chapter 10 has three stories in a row, and we've heard them the last 3 weeks. The rich young man, James and John, and Bartimaeus. Chapter 10, three stories in a row. The rich young man, he's a nice guy. but he's too attached to his money. James and John, who want the two top spots in the kingdom, they're nice guys, but they're way too arrogant. Bartimaeus, he turns out to be the true disciple. He throws away his cloak, throws away his money, his livelihood. There's no arrogance, no pretense. He just wants to see. He wants to believe. He wants to trust. He wants to follow. He wants to walk with Jesus. So today's story, Mark's gospel, invites us to see ourselves in Bartimaeus. First of all of us are basically beggars. We feel that the most when we're in the hospital or going through dark times. We're really beggars. We don't deserve anything, but for some reason, Jesus thinks we're worthy, and he doesn't pass us by when we call. Instead, he stops. He looks us in the eye, and he asks us a question. What do you want me to do for you? How would you answer that right now? What do you want me to do for you? He invites us to be part of his inner circle. He blesses us with unearned grace. And he invites us to walk with him on the road that leads to life and happiness.